Why is the resurrection so important to the Christian? Well, for one, Jesus said it would happen. Two, it demonstrates his lordship. And three, it gives us hope for the future. As Paul writes to the Thessalonians in Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 14, he says, "For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so God will bring with him with those who have fallen asleep, that is, died in Jesus." For Christians, his entire faith is dependent on the resurrection. Without this one event, we are, as Paul said, above all men most to be pitied. But can we even know for sure that the resurrection happened? Or did simply something else happen, something that can be explained in a naturalistic way? Well, this is something I want us to look at today. And before we consider the evidence we have for the resurrection, let's first consider the facts. And the first fact is, Jesus died by crucifixion. In likely AD 30, on April 7th, Jesus died by crucifixion. Due to the pressure of the Jewish leaders, the procurator, Pontius Pilate, first scourged Jesus. Now, what does it mean to be scourged? Well, scourging is done by a handle that is strapped with several cords that are weighted down with pieces of animal bone or metal. And the subject is tied to a post, and they are beaten pretty much with this flail on their back, their lower back, and sometimes their face. And unfortunately, this completely shreds the body. Many victims are known to simply pass out from this, and it is not uncommon for a person to die from this one event. And then Jesus was crucified. Well, how is a person crucified? Well, unfortunately, there are very many ways to crucify a person, but it appears that Jesus was crucified in a T formation, that is, an uppercase T or a lowercase T, where he was suspended by nails in his hands and his feet. And it's a very agonizing type of punishment because your body is constantly in an uncomfortable position. Many scholars think that people who were crucified would constantly shift the weight from their hands to their feet back and forth, unable to get comfortable, constantly in pain. Some scholars think that it was very difficult to breathe because your chest is constantly expanded, and it's very difficult to breathe the entire time. Jesus, after he was scourged, spent 6 hours on the cross, and then finally he died. And these facts are confirmed from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and even historians such as Tacitus and Josephus. But let's look at the final fact. The tomb was found empty. As we see in Matthew chapter 27, verses 57 through 66, the body of Jesus was given to a man by the name of Joseph of Arimathea. Now, as we see, Joseph is a very wealthy man. And this is indicated by the fact that he owns his own tomb. This is a tomb that was carved out from rock. And only wealthy people could afford this. And as we see in the other accounts, as he builds up the courage to ask Pilate for the body, Pilate ascertains the fact that he is indeed dead, and he gives Joseph the body. And he supplies the burial shroud, and as we see in John's account, Nicodemus provides oils for his body so that Jesus is given a proper burial. And we see in Mark chapter 15, verse 40, that Mary, the mother of James the Less, Salome, Joses, and Mary Magdalene all see this take place with a stone being rolled over the tomb of Jesus. Now, in the first century, if you were wealthy and you could afford a tomb like this, your tomb would be sealed with a disc-shaped rock. These stones could weigh up to 4,000 pounds. That's the size of a modern-day car. So they're very difficult to move. And what would happen is that it would take several men to put this into place. And they would place this in a groove on the ground so that the rock would not shift back and forth. On top of this, as we see in Matthew's account, the tomb was guarded by several Roman soldiers to assure that his body would not be stolen. And finally, we see that the tomb was found empty. If you'll turn with me to Acts chapter 2. Acts chapter 2, verses 22 through 24. Men of Israel, listen to these words. Jesus the Nazarene, a man attested to you by God with miracles and wonders and signs which God performed through him in your midst, just as you yourselves know. This man, delivered over by the predetermined plan and foreknowledge of God, you nailed to a cross by the hands of godless men and put him to death. But God raised him up again, putting an end to the agony of death, since it was impossible for him to be held by its power. If you will jump down with me to verse 32. This Jesus God raised up again, to which we are all witnesses. Now, one of the main points that that Peter is trying to drive home is the fact that Jesus has risen from the dead. And we see in Acts chapter 2, verses 25 through 28, he quotes David. And we'll go ahead and actually read that passage too, just so we can appreciate what's going on. Verses 25 through 28. For David says of him, I saw the Lord as always by my presence, for he is at my right hand so that I will not be shaken. Therefore my heart was glad and my tongue exulted. Moreover, my flesh also will live in hope, because you will not abandon my soul to Hades, nor will you allow your Holy One to undergo decay. You have made known to me the ways of life. You will make me full of gladness and with your presence. So he keeps bringing up this point that Jesus has rose from the dead. And he quotes this passage from the book of Psalm written by David. And people would assume that since David wrote that passage, he was talking about himself. David was talking about himself. But Peter makes a very good point that David could not be talking about himself, because David's tomb is still there. David had been buried for 1,000 years. His body had clearly undergone decay. He says, in contrast to that, we have the body of Jesus, which is gone, which is not undergoing decay. And because of this one sermon, as we see in Acts chapter 2, verse 41, 3,000 people become Christians in a single day. Now, if the tomb of Jesus was not empty, if his body was still there, absolutely anyone could have destroyed this sermon. All they would have had to do was to walk outside the walls of Jerusalem, walk up to the tomb where he was buried, and simply see that his body was still there. But it wasn't. In fact, this is why the church in Jerusalem was established less than 2 months after Jesus died, because the tomb was found empty. And we have many other witnesses that support this. We have the women who support this, the brother of James, the living apostles. And even 75% of modern scholars conclude that the tomb was found empty. Now, it does not mean they believe in the resurrection, but they at least conclude that these are the facts, that Jesus died by crucifixion, that he was buried in a tomb, and his tomb was found empty. So, before we look at the evidence before the resurrection, let's first consider alternate claims. Let's see if we can find a less fanciful way to look at it. If my grandfather, my grandfather's body, who currently rests in Dement Cemetery, if his body goes missing, none of us are going to assume a resurrection. And there are many skeptics in the first century and today who look at this fantastic story about Jesus and they say, well, maybe we can explain it in another way. And so let's look at some of the alternate claims that people make to explain away the resurrection. And if we can't find anything that makes sense, well, maybe that in and of itself is evidence to prove that Jesus did, in fact, rise from the dead. One of the arguments that are made against the empty tomb is that Jesus faked his death. And if Jesus did fake his death, this would explain a lot. It would explain the eyewitness accounts after the resurrection. It would explain why so many people thought he did rise from the dead, because not many people survive a crucifixion. But is it possible that Jesus faked his death? Well, there are some things we need to consider. First off, he was scourged, as we already talked about. He was crucified, and as he was hanging on the cross, to make sure he was dead, a Roman soldier ran a spear through his side, likely destroying internal organs in the process. And then he was placed in a hole in the ground for 3 days without food, water, or medical attention. And let's say, hypothetically, for argument's sake, that Jesus did fake his death. There's no way a healthy person, much less a critically injured person, could move a 4,000-pound rock. So the first thing we can conclude is that Jesus did not fake his death, as some unfortunately have suggested. Well, the other argument that is made is that his body was stolen. And this was actually the earliest recorded argument against the resurrection, which you can find in Matthew chapter 28, verses 11 through 15. This is what the leaders of the Jewish people were saying. They said, oh, well, the disciples had stolen his body. But can we support this claim? Well, there's an issue with this argument because it would have been very difficult for the disciples to steal the body of Jesus. Remember, the tomb is being guarded by Roman soldiers. And Roman soldiers are, at this point in history, perhaps the greatest soldiers that ever lived, at least in reference to their capabilities. They were the backbone of the Roman Empire. They were part of the reason that the Roman Empire was able to last 500 years. They were the reason that they were able to stretch their territory all the way from Africa to modern-day England. These men were physically fit. They were trained. They were armed to the teeth. They were covered in armor. And they had the motivation to guard the body of Jesus. We know that in the first century, if a Roman soldier was to lose a prisoner, he would have to forfeit his life. He would be executed. And we could assume the same rules apply for a missing body. So not only do they have the capability to defend the body of Jesus, they have the motivation as well. Well, who were the disciples of Jesus? Is there any way they could have overcome these Roman soldiers? Well, of what we know of their professions, we know at least one was a tax collector, and we know that several others were fishermen. And fishermen were indeed strong. They were physically fit. They had to be for their profession. But could they have gone against Roman soldiers being untrained? No. In fact, of what we know about them, we know that they're not actually good fighters. A few days before the resurrection, we know Peter actually tries to kill someone because they're trying to arrest Jesus. And he misses and cuts off their ear instead. So these are not good fighters. They're not physically trained. Not to mention the fact that they don't have any weapons. In fact, as we see in Luke chapter 22, verse 38, they have a total of 2 swords altogether, and yet they somehow have to go against these Roman soldiers. It is impossible for these disciples to go against these Roman soldiers and survive. And even if they had tried to steal the body, there likely would have been many casualties on both sides. There would be corpses laying all over the place, and everyone would know that this is what happened. But there's no evidence that this took place. In fact, we don't have any record of the disciples of Jesus dying until the martyrdom of Stephen. So we see that clearly Jesus could have not faked his death. And we see clearly that his body could have not been stolen. Well, what about the last argument that is commonly made? Mass hallucination. Now, I know this might seem a little unusual to us, but this is one of the arguments that is made against the resurrection. Some people say that people simply had hallucinations after the death of Jesus, and people assumed that he had risen from the dead. But that's not how hallucinations work. Now, unfortunately, there are many people in our society and of that time as well who did have hallucinations, although often these hallucinations are often auditory. They're whispers you hear, voices you hear. Now, some people do see visual hallucinations, but when a person has a hallucination, it's just them by themselves. It's not multiple people at the same time. As we see, and as we'll see in some of the passages that we'll look at, often when Jesus appears to an individual, he appears to multiple people at the same time. And these are just not experiences where they see Jesus, they touch him, they put their hands in his side or their fingers in his hands. They eat with him, they watch him eat, and they touch his feet as well. These are not the marks of a hallucination, so this theory, too, falls short. I picked the best arguments that I could find against the resurrection. We're not going to talk about the others where some suggest that Jesus had a twin who he had come out after his death. There are some other weirder ones, but these are the best ones I could find. Well, if we can't find a naturalistic explanation for the empty tomb, let's consider what the Bible has to say. Let's first consider the witness of the women. As we see in Mark chapter 16, verse 9, we see Mary Magdalene is the first to see Jesus. But in Luke chapter 10, if you want to, you can turn with me there. Luke chapter 24, verse 10. Luke chapter 24, verse 10. We see that Mary Magdalene and several other women see Jesus. 24, verse 10. Now, when they were Mary and Joanna, and Mary the mother of James, and also the other women were telling these things to the apostles. I think I wrote down the wrong verse, but those are the women that see Jesus. And if you look at the rest of the passage, you'll see that they witness Jesus. And they fall before him and they touch his feet and they all see him at the same time. So far, we have at least five eyewitnesses. It talks about the other women, so we know that there are at least two other women there. And this account is extremely important simply for the fact that they're women. Now, I know that might not make too much sense to us because we know women can tell the truth just like anyone else. Well, in the first century in Rome and in Greece and in Judea, the testimony of women was considered to be no better than the testimony of a thief. There were people who were very sexist toward women. And so it's interesting that Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John would record their testimony unless they're simply trying to get the facts straight. If they were trying to make up a story that they could market to other people to spread their ideas, this is not something they would include unless they're trying to get the story straight, unless they're simply trying to tell it how it is. So this indeed is an interesting testimony. The next witness we'll look at is the witness of James. And if you want to, you can read John chapter 7, verse 5. We find out that the brothers of Jesus do not believe in him. James did not believe in Jesus, even though James had grown up with him. He had spent a lot of time with him. He was his younger brother, and yet he did not believe. Well, what makes him change his mind? Well, as we see in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 7, after the resurrection, Jesus makes an appearance to James. You know, you would think that if James had watched his brother be executed, he wouldn't believe. That would sort of be the last nail in the coffin. Yet only after the death of Jesus does he actually change his mind. So it appears that he did indeed see Jesus. And he was not the only skeptic. We know that his brother Jude also was skeptical of Jesus. He also turned to Christ afterward, as well as Paul did as well. Well, let's look at the testimony of the apostles, or the disciples, I should say. We see in Matthew chapter 28, verses 16 through 20, Mark 16, verses 14 through 20, and John 21, verses 1 through 3, that Jesus reveals himself on multiple occasions to his disciples, to his apostles. Now, often when we think of Jesus and his followers, we just think of the 12. Because when we look at old paintings, we always see Jesus and his 12 apostles. But Jesus was often accompanied by sometimes as many as 100 people at one time. And we see in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 5, that 500 people bore witness to his resurrection, to his resurrected body. And this would explain the tenacity at which they followed Jesus, even after he died. But of course, the question remains, why should we trust their testimony at all? People make up fantastic things all the time. What should make their testimony testimony more than anything else. Well, let's consider what they had to gain from talking about the resurrection of Jesus. What did they have to gain for writing these accounts for us to learn from? Well, nothing. You know, it's easy to be a Christian in the 21st century where your rights are relatively protected. But at this time, Christians were hated. In fact, it wouldn't be for 300 years until they were able to practice their religion in peace. These early disciples didn't earn any money. They didn't earn any power. There was no glory in being a Christian. As we know, Paul said, Christians were considered the scum of the earth. And yet they were willing to pass on this testimony, not only to their friends and neighbors, but to us in their literature, so that we too might believe that Jesus rose from the dead. So let's look at the facts one more time. First off, we know that he died by crucifixion. Second, we know that he was placed in a tomb. And third, we know that the tomb was found empty. We also know that we do not have any naturalistic explanations for the empty tomb. And finally, we have hundreds and hundreds of witnesses that lay claim to the fact that Jesus did indeed rise from the dead as he had predicted, as he promised. And this is one of the many reasons why Christians believe that Jesus did in fact rise from the dead. And if you're here today and you say, well, that's not enough for me. I need a little bit more. I have some more questions. I have some more things I need to work through. Please feel free to let us know. This is something we would love to talk to you about. And if you're dealing with other questions you'd like us to help you find an answer to, we would love to help you in any way that we can. But if you're here today and you've heard this message and you believe that Jesus did in fact rise from the dead and that he did indeed die on the cross for your sins, and you're willing to dedicate your life to Christ, we would love to assist you that. If you're seeking to be baptized and through that Christ will add you to his church, we would love to help you in that. Or if you were once obedient to the gospel, but you're no longer living in a manner pleasing to God, we would love to pray for you. And God certainly will forgive you. If there's anything we can do for you spiritually, please come forward as we stand and sing.